From Millway to Latrobe, Altoona to Erie, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, State House Democrats are set to roll out yet another government mandate in an effort to force conversion to so-called green energy. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler for a Capitol Watch analysis. And power plants are shutting down, imperiling the dependability of Pennsylvania's electric grid. And Governor Josh Shapiro's policies are making matters worse. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Democrat-controlled Pennsylvania House of Representatives will not return to voting session until March 18th. Democrats' one-seat majority is set to vanish next week with the resignation of one of its members, which drops the chamber into a 101-101 tie. Fearful of conducting business without a majority, Democrat leadership plans to hold the chamber in recess until that seat can be filled via special election. Of course, that is politically an untenable position, so Democrat leadership is blaming the need to fix a leak as the reason for keeping the chamber empty. Meanwhile, portions of the state budget, which should have been completed last June, remain unresolved. Among the budgeted items still not approved are free breakfast for all Pennsylvania public school students. Governor Josh Shapiro touts the free breakfast as an example of his ability to get stuff done, but the education code, which authorizes that spending, has still not been approved because Shapiro broke a deal with Senate leaders to provide funding for a program to give education options to students in the state's most underperforming school districts. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court and the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas once again topped the list of the worst courts in the nation for allowing abusive and massive verdicts in product liability and medical malpractice cases. The American Tort Reform Association cited the two Pennsylvania courts and courts in Georgia as the worst in the nation for abuse of the tort system. Lawyers from across the country often venue shop to bring cases in the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas, which is known for so-called jackpot jury awards to plaintiffs. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. In its latest effort to micromanage the state's energy sector, House Democrats are introducing yet another mandate trying to force conversion to thus far undependable and economically non-viable so-called green energy sources. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association for a Capitol Watch discussion on the impact of that legislation.
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my number one pal, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
It's great to be here with you again, David. Thank you.
Well, we're going to grapple with the issues as we find them. And in the never-ending march of bad ideas, let me tell you about the latest one. So it's next week that the House Committee on Environmental Resources and Energy is going to consider House Bill 1467. Now, you probably wonder, now what is House Bill 1467?
I hope you tell us.
Yes, it is a it's a mandate. So we do Pennsylvania does some things right, and then we manage to mess it up. Pennsylvania has a competitive market for electricity. This was one of the great achievements of Governor Ridge. It was a long and expensive process, but we reached the point where that we have competition among electric providers to deliver to consumers based on price. It's managed to achieve incredible savings, especially for large customers like manufacturers, large energy customers. So then Ed Rendell came along, and the Rendell administration got a carve out to say, okay, we're only going to compete during for a certain percentage, and then we've got this set aside of mandated use. I think it's like it tops out at I forget the percentage. It's less than 20%. Well, House Bill 1467, which has been put forward by Chester County Representative Danielle Friel Otten, it would mandate that 30% of Pennsylvania's electricity would be generated by solar power. There are some problems with that. And Rebecca, you of all people understand this well. We're both big Star Trek fans.
Yes, and, yes, we are.
And like, how awesome would it be if we had Starfleet transporters?
Yes.
If we had replicators, if we had dilithium crystal powered warp drives,
that would be incredible.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I would love that stuff. The only problem is that it's not real.
Not yet.
It might be
someday. Maybe
we don't know. But it would obviously be unwise to act as though those things were real, or to come to depend on them as if they were real. And this is what that legislation of mandating 30% of Pennsylvania's electricity come from solar energy. This is something very much like that, because you know the workhorses of Pennsylvania's power generation are natural gas and nuclear and coal. So, and then combining that with other things, hydroelectric, that this bill would exclude about 95% of current electricity generation to build out this other sector. Well,
so that includes, just a question, so that includes renewable sources, non-solar renewable sources,
right,
like wind, and
right,
non-emissions based sources like nuclear.
Yeah.
It's solar only,
yeah,
focused only on solar.
Right. So,
okay.
The problems are, well, they're manifest. But let's start with the fact that, okay, so we already have a mandate for solar power of 0.5%, so 0.5%. And that solar mandate, according to the Public Utility Commission, complying with it, those costs were passed on to Pennsylvania ratepayers, and that was $28.65 million extra to the ratepayers in 2022 to pay for that 0.5%. If this legislation would pass, that would increase the amount by 60 times, and at current compliance prices, and this isn't even including inflation, it would cost ratepayers $1.8 billion per year.
Per year.
Per year. And that,
wow,
you know, I mean, maybe it's my, you know, my Scottish ancestry, you know, coming through. I think $1.8 billion is a noticeable amount of money.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are other problems that come along with this, that solar panels they're intermittent. Mm-hmm. And even when you build out capacity, they rarely come to use the fullness of the capacity. So it's like it could go as high as 100%, but it almost never does. So I'm going to go through some math. I know that numbers are hard on the radio. Mm-hmm. So I'll go through this slow. Let's just think about it. Okay. So in the year 2022, Pennsylvania used a total of 245,935,000 megawatt hours of electricity. So that's the whole Commonwealth for a whole year, about 246 million megawatts.
And that's individuals and businesses.
Right.
The whole state.
The whole state.
Gotcha.
So multiply by 30% to understand how much solar would have to be provided, that taking that number, multiplying it by 30%, it would be 73,780,500 megawatt hours. So that's 73,780 gigawatt hours. Recognizing that it takes 2.97 acres, just about 3 acres, to host enough solar panels for 1 gigawatt of electricity,
That means that it would take 219,126 acres of solar panels. But because solar capacity, solar generation capacity averages out to about 25% of total capacity, that means you'd have to multiply that by four, which would give you 876,506 acres of solar panels to actually generate that total amount for 30% of our total electricity. So 876,506 acres is 1,369 square miles of solar panels that will be necessary to meet that mandate. And that's not even considering other challenges like, you know, battery storage and transmission lines and all, just the basic math. Philadelphia County is 134 square miles. Delaware County is 184 square miles. Chester County is 750 square miles, a total of 1,367 square miles, almost meeting the necessary paneling. So to achieve a 30% solar mandate, just from the physical generation, Pennsylvania would need to install enough solar panels to cover every square inch of Philadelphia, Delaware, and Chester counties.
Wow.
That's not reasonable.
That's
not reasonable.
Well, for me, I kind of think about it as, you know, what are the alternative uses for that land?
Mm-hmm.
And having worked for the state agency that manages the state forests, I know there are about 2.2 million acres of state forests in Pennsylvania. And if my back of the envelope math here is correct, that would total about a third the size of Pennsylvania state forests,
mm-hmm.
if I'm right about that.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, you know, leveling vegetation.
Yes. Destroying habitat.
Destroying habitat and building a semi-impermeable surface on that land.
Uh-huh.
Not to mention managing the rainwater, the water that you have to do when you develop lands.
Right.
Which is additional acreage that you'd have to build into the plans. So we're talking about an enormous portion of Pennsylvania.
So you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers with Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. And certainly in your industry, this electrification fetish is also on the march.
Yeah, absolutely. But I did, just coming back to your one point that you made earlier today about the choice that we have in electricity in the
mm-hmm.
Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing to prevent a business or a consumer, a person from choosing to supply their electricity with solar.
Correct.
So they can do that already if they wish. But this would mandate that 20% of our electricity in the state come from solar sources.
Yes, 30% of the electricity in the state. It would destroy consumer choice. It would greatly reduce the scope of the competitive market, and that it would, you know, obviously inflict, I guess, suppression of the other energy sectors in favor of this one, you know, expensive, low yield, intermittent, unreliable energy source.
When you say suppression, that means jobs.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And it's, you know, we talk a lot about accountability. And the marketplace, like the market function is what actually delivers accountability, because it applies that strictest of all tests, which is, is this worth me spending my own money on it?
Mm-hmm.
And again, if somebody wanted to have all solar and to buy the gear and to hook it up and whatnot for their house, that's great. They can do that if they want. Or if they want to buy electricity that was generated by solar panels, you can do that too through your utility.
Mm-hmm.
But to wreck the marketplace by imposing a truly ruinous mandate, this is very, very poor public policy.
Well, and I'm coming back to trucking. The mandates are really what the issue is. And I like this idea of choice that I think we need to keep talking about, because in the electric market, you have consumer choice. Trucking companies need to have choice to provide the services that they provide, because there are just an enormous number of types of trucks, types of loads, types of customers. It's a very specialized area. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of mandates coming down from the federal level and from California, which many states have adopted the California rules, that will mandate electric and no emissions vehicles. Mm-hmm. So that is problematic for many, many reasons, and I could go into it for quite a long, more time than we have today. But I'll just say, because we're talking about electric supply here, that I know the Biden administration is pushing electric vehicles. And actually, it's funny, there was a letter just issued by, I think it was 7,000 car manufacturer, car dealers across mm-hmm. the country mm-hmm. pushing back on the electric car mandates because mm-hmm. they can't sell them. They're sitting on their lots and they can't sell them.
Right.
Because there are many impractical things about electric vehicles that a lot of consumers don't find them practical to buy. And that's even more so with trucks, because there are a lot of issues with them. But if those mandates were to go into effect and we would transition the entire car and truck fleet in the United States to electric, not only would we have to maintain the current supply of electricity, which we have now, but we'd have to increase it by 40%.
Mm-hmm.
40%. So right. All of what you're talking about now with, the build out of solar panels across the state and the enormous amount of space that would take, if we were to do that and then on top of it push electric vehicle mandates on top of that,
mm-hmm.
take it times another 40%, because yeah. we'd have to increase all of that energy production by that much more to accommodate those mandates.
And Rebecca, you're exactly right. And it's just so important to understand this in context. So Pennsylvania is part of an energy grid. It's called the PJM Interconnection. And so PJM is the entity that manages the grid that includes Pennsylvania. And there was a report, let me quote from it. For the first time in recent history, PJM could face decreasing reserve margins should these trends, high load growth, increasing rates of generator retirements, and slower entry of new resources, continue. The amount of generation retirements appears to be more certain than the timely arrival of replacement generation resources, given that the quantity of retirements is codified in various policy objectives, while the impacts to the pace of new entry of the Inflation Reduction Act post-pandemic supply chain issues and other externalities are not still fully understood. That's an extremely understated diplomatic way of saying the lights could go out.
Yeah.
Because the reserve margins, what they're talking about here, that's the amount of buffer that we have in the grid, which is like how much more energy is actually available than what we need in any given moment in time. And so it's when the amount that's available dips below demand, that's when you start having blackouts. Mm-hmm. And having those healthy buffers is what protects the grid and makes sure that no matter where the demand is coming from, that there's enough energy to keep powering everything that's plugged into the grid.
When you have an emergency, you have a blackout, you have a hurricane, you have some sort of emergency that has to be responded to immediately, who do you turn to first to get the supplies where they need? That's the trucking industry. If you have no power to drive the electric trucks,
mm-hmm.
what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of our biggest concerns.
I mean, we're talking about the risk of losing power to our hospitals, our police and fire stations, our nursing homes. You're talking about losing refrigeration and then lack of food and medicines.
Medicine,
it's like this is all very serious stuff. And that's before we even get to the issues about how those technologies are manufactured and where they're manufactured, because those solar panels require elements that we do not have in this country, that we do not process in this country, that it all is controlled by China. And this was done on purpose. This is a strategic national move on the part of the dictatorship in Beijing to control rare earth elements and thereby to control the technologies that rely on them. And, you know, I mean, the environmentalists, they, I don't know, they may think that they have good motives, but when you look at the use of slave labor in China, that in occupied East Turkestan, which the Chaicoms call Xinjiang, you have over a million people from the ethnicity of East Turkestan called the Uyghurs. They're in concentration camps. They're being compelled to perform acts of labor, including factory work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for all the things that you know, we argue about in this country, left and right, Democrat, Republican, business, labor, I hope that we would all be able to agree that, number one, American workers should never have to compete against slave labor. Mm-hmm. And number two, that American consumers should never be exposed to slave-made goods mm-hmm. in the U.S. marketplace. Like, can't we agree on that much? But these supply chains with the solar panels, they're all complicit with those kinds of evil things that are happening in China. And again, we'll just add that to the long and growing list of things that it looks like these advocates have just never thought about.
No, I think you're absolutely right. There are so many unintended consequences we could go into here, but I'm interested to hear the discussion next week at that hearing.
Yeah, so me too. I will be a panelist there, so I get to have a ringside seat at the circus. And so anyway, but that's in the future. For now, we're actually out of time. Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me and being part of our conversation here. Where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. And as always, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA for Perspective. So from Rebecca and me, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Cleverly announced the day before Thanksgiving, when few pay attention to the news, Governor Josh Shapiro's administration appealed a recent Commonwealth Court ruling that voided Pennsylvania's participation in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, known as REGGI. Simply put, REGGI is a carbon tax on the generators of electricity that claims to be a means of reducing carbon emissions to combat the fallacy of man-made climate change, which has become a staple of left-wing orthodoxy. The compact was entered into by former Governor Tom Wolf, who did so by executive fiat, bypassing legislative approval. While legislative approval was never going to happen, the legal issue before the court stems from the fact REGGI is a tax, and no tax can be constitutionally levied without an affirmative vote by the General Assembly. Wolf and Shapiro have contended REGGI is not a tax, but Commonwealth Court agreed with legislative leaders that a tax it is. The issue now goes before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which has a history of legislating from the bench while kicking the state constitution to the curb. But this is a tricky situation for both Shapiro and for the High Court. The anvil of REGGI hanging over the head of the electric generation sector has already forced the closure of one coal-fired power plant. The result was the loss of hundreds of family-sustaining union jobs. Should Pennsylvania continue in the REGGI alliance, hundreds, perhaps thousands more jobs will be lost. The projected 30% increase in electricity costs will also substantially impact working-class families already reeling from the nearly 20% cumulative inflation rate since Joe Biden took office. So the issue pits two traditional Democrat constituencies, radical environmentalists and trade unions, against each other. That puts Shapiro on the hot seat. So he did what he typically does. He is attempting to finesse the issue by framing it as one of protecting executive authority rather than one of economic impact to those whose jobs depend on a healthy energy sector and to consumers. Setting aside that REGGI is an ineffective solution to a non-existent problem, it also exacerbates the growing frailty of the nation's electric power grid. At a time when radical Greens are attempting to force the conversion of the nation's vehicle fleet to electric vehicles, his policies are also not only preventing the construction of new power generation facilities, but they are destroying existing capacity. A plan to build a $1 billion natural gas-fired power plant in Renovo, Clinton County, was abandoned earlier this year due to the left's opposition to the use of fossil fuels. Their fight against new electric generating facilities extends to non-fossil fuel projects as well. Plans to build a power generating dam on the Susquehanna River in York County encountered stiff opposition. The shuttering of power plants is not limited to Pennsylvania. Penns Woods is part of the PJM power grid, which includes Maryland. An agreement with the radical left Sierra Club is going to result in the closure of the Brandon Shores coal plant located just outside of Baltimore. Owned by Talon Energy, closure of the plant is related to the company's transition to as yet undependable green energy sources, which fail to compensate for the generation loss from the forced closure of coal-fired power plants. Christopher Summers, founder and president of the Maryland Public Policy Institute, told Fox News Digital that the accelerated timeline for closure of the Brandon Shores plant is going to create, quote, a major reliability concern for the state. He added, until current risks to our grid are fully dealt with, it is a mistake to close reliable baseload power plants too soon, end quote. The fallacy of such politically driven premature transitions to so-called green energy sources manifested itself in September when ERCOT, which manages the Texas electric grid, came dangerously close to imposing power blackouts as a heat wave, coupled with a lack of wind, combined to stress the system. A significant portion of electric inputs to the Texas power grid is derived from wind power, which proved to be undependable at exactly the time it was most needed. Reggie is a dagger aimed directly at the heart of the dependability of the PJM power grid. At the moment, the dagger is in Governor Josh Shapiro's hands. Despite his attempt to reframe the issue as one of executive authority, it is actually a capitulation to the environmental extremists of his own party, leaving consumers and union labor workers as collateral damage. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WEMR-FM and WBHV-FM in State College, along with WMBS-AM and FM in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.